Hi, diddly ho, neighborinos, and welcome into the week 8 edition of Sunday Best. I'm your host, Jay Felicio, and I just want to say I appreciate each and every one of you who take the time out of your day to take a listen. The show is a short, quick-hitting podcast reacting to the happenings in the Sunday games. I'm not going to hit every player, I'm not going to hit every game, but I'll do my best to hit the most impactful storylines. I'll jump around the league and talk about some of Sunday's best performances, Sunday's worst performances, if you will, and then I'll wrap up with any injury news that has any fantasy repercussions. All this in 20 minutes or less, so your money back. The Giants shut down Saquon Barkley in their first meeting 2 weeks ago, but that was not the case in Week 8. Barkley had his best game of 2025 by far, totaling 18 touches for 174 yards. His first two rushes over 20 yards this season, with two total touchdowns, one rushing and one receiving. Whew, that was a mouthful. Saquon tweaked his groin and left the game early, and that meant Tank Bigsby time. I felt like a proud papa watching Bigsby run all over the Giants, even if they are my favorite team. But he rushed for 104 yards on just 9 carries and showed every bit of the explosiveness that got me all hot and bothered just thinking about him in a Liam Cohen offense. It was the first time since 2013 that Philly had two running backs rush for over 100 yards in the same game. The last time was LeSean McCoy and Bryce Brown. After the game, Barkley said, and I quote, "I'm good. We had a good lead, so they sat me down for a little bit." It was fantastic to see Barkley finally have a big-time performance this season, but I'm not quite ready to push him back into RB1 status just yet. He rushed for 150 yards against the Giants, which was just 9 yards short of matching his total rushing yards from Week 2 through Week 7. Considering the Eagles have a Week 9 bye and Barkley's confidence after the game that he's fine, I don't expect him to miss any games. But Tank Bigsby has played himself firmly into the mustache handcuff conversation. Not mustache, must stash. After throwing 6 interceptions over his previous 2 games, it calls for him to permanently be benched for Quinn Ewers. Tua Tagovailoa throws for 4 touchdowns and has no turnovers against the same Falcons defense that shut down Josh Allen and has allowed 4 combined passing touchdowns since Week 2. With the big day from Tua comes a bounce-back performance from Jaylen Waddle. The man with the best touchdown celebration in the NFL caught 5 of 6 passes for 99 yards, including a 43-yard touchdown pass. It was Waddle's second game this season with over 20 fantasy points. Talent was never the question with Waddle. It was just which Tua was going to show up that week. The Dolphins face off against the Ravens on Thursday night, but I'm still not overly confident in the Miami offense after just 1 game. Tua did enough today to make him a respectable superflex starter versus Baltimore. And while I wish I could push him higher, I still consider Waddle more of a low-end wide receiver 2, high-end wide receiver 3. He still has that significant upside, but the Dolphins' offense can turn back into a dumpster fire at any moment. Miami came into Week 8 allowing the most rushing yards per game in the entire NFL. Atlanta came into the week averaging the 4th most rushing yards per game in the entire NFL. So naturally, Bijan Robinson, one of the best backs in the league, gets shut down and has his first game this season under 16 fantasy points, which also happened to be his worst game since Week 15 of his rookie season. To be fair, the Falcons offense wouldn't have been able to move the ball against the JV team of your closest high school, but it was an absolute nightmare for what should have been his 4th game in a row with over 20 points. Thankfully for the Falcons offense, Michael Penix is on track to return next week versus New England, but even if he's not, this injury isn't considered long-term. That being said, there is zero concern for Bijan Robinson's fantasy value, no matter who's under center, even if it's the ghost of Kirk O'Chains. James Cook was chefing up something special today. My goodness. Cook ran for 216 yards, 2 touchdowns on 19 carries, a near career high, the most rushing yards for any running back this season. And what's even more impressive is Carolina came into the game allowing the 8th fewest rushing yards per game and was one of 11 teams allowing under 100 yards per game. For next-gen stats, Cook generated an additional 121 rushing yards over expected, the 4th most in a game since 2018. After a few stinkers in a row, there were some people questioning Cook's status as an elite fantasy back. Not anymore. Not anymore. Not anymore. No more. You'd think with such a monster game from James Cook that there wouldn't be anything else for any other Bill, let alone a wide receiver, but Khalil Shakir said, nah. He had himself a day with 7 targets, 6 catches, 88 yards, and a touchdown. A touchdown of the yak variety, if you will. Shakir's top speed on the play was 20.4 miles per hour per next-gen stats. It's been a bit of a disappointment to start the season, despite being Josh Allen's most targeted receiver, but he's averaging more than 6 targets per game over Buffalo's last 4 and has 14 or more fantasy points in 3 of his last 5. Shakir is a rock-solid wide receiver three whose floor and ceiling both seem to be on the rise. While it's not the route that I necessarily would have gone, I do understand the Panthers' idea of splitting carries between their two talented backs, but what in the Bojangles was that? For the second straight week, Rico Dowdle more than doubled the yards per carry at Chuba Hubbard, yet for some reason Hubbard played 59% of snaps compared to Dowdle's 34, and he outcarried him 12-8. Hubbard also saw the only target between the two and scored the only touchdown. As I said in my Week 8 Start Sit article, this is going to be an ugly timeshare. Both of the Carolina backs are nothing more than a low-floor, low-ceiling flex play sharing the backfield in this manner. If there was anybody questioning Drake May coming into this game, he shushed him up real quick. Over the last three, Cleveland had given up just 16 points per game, and the former Tar Heel hung 32 on him. May started the game slow, heading into the half 10 for 16 for 168 yards with no touchdown and a pick, but the second half was another story, going 8 for 8, 114 passing yards, and count them, 1, 2, 3 touchdowns. Drake May is truly having a sophomore breakout. He's proven himself as a matchup-proof, must-start quarterback in all formats, and dare I say, MVP candidate. In the wise words of world-renowned wordsmith Rafiki, the king has returned. Or has he? Yes, Derrick Henry had his second straight game over 14 fantasy points, scoring his 111th and 112th rushing touchdowns, passing Walter Payton for the fifth most in NFL history. Yes, it was a second straight game with 20-plus rushing attempts. But it was his third game this season, averaging under 3.5 yards per carry, and honestly, he just looks like he's lost a step. I know it may be blasphemous to say, but I think the move to make with Henry is to sell high. It's not that he can't maintain this level of production, but I just think it's more likely that he doesn't. If you can get RB1 value for him, heck, if you can get high-end RB2 value, I'd make the move in a heartbeat. After back-to-back games with barely over 5 fantasy points, Roma Dunze had a second-best game of the season, catching 7 of 10 targets for 114 yards, despite the struggles of Caleb Williams. A season-high 38 passing attempts was enough to get Williams his second-highest passing total in 285 yards, but he failed to throw a touchdown for the second great... After back-to-back games with barely over 5 fantasy points, Roma Dunze had a second-best game of the season, catching 7 of 10 targets for 114 yards, despite the struggles of Caleb Williams. A season-high 38 passing attempts was enough for Williams to get his second-highest passing total of the season, but he failed to throw a touchdown for the second straight game and has a 1-2 touchdown-interception ratio over his last three games. I've been a proponent of Williams and the flashes of brilliance that he's shown this season, but this was a matchup that he should have gone ballistic in. The Bears were actually still in this game late in the fourth quarter. That is, until Williams threw a pick to Nate Wiggins deep in their own territory to set up the Ravens inside the 10, which they would in turn go up 10 points two plays later. I still believe in the upside of Williams, but he's closer to a matchup-based start than an every-week start until we start to see some more consistency. I'm not going to bore you with talking about Jonathan Taylor. He's an absolute menace, scoring 3 touchdowns for the third straight game, placing himself right in the thick of MVP conversation. But the cult I will talk about is wide receiver Michael Pittman, who had a second straight game scoring over 20 fantasy points and came down with his 6th touchdown catch of the season. He made a ludicrous one-arm catch with the Titans DB all over him. The touchdown ties Pittman's career high for a single season. He's not just the Colts wide receiver one, he's quietly having a wide receiver one season in fantasy. For some reason, all the struggling quarterbacks who had bad matchups this week decided that they really didn't care. CJ Stroud had his first 300-yard game of the season going against the 49ers, who had held 4 of the previous 7 quarterbacks they faced to 1 or fewer passing touchdowns and 3 to under 200 passing yards. This was without Nico Collins, who missed the game due to a concussion. It was an encouraging sign for a season-long value, but he's far from somebody you can trust. Up next is Denver, and if Stroud can come out of that game putting up solid numbers against the Broncos defense, it may be time to have that conversation. Just when he was left for dead, Chase Brown has revived his fantasy value over the last 2 weeks. The historically inefficient runner had a second straight game with a yards per carry over 6, which is even more impressive considering it was against defenses allowing less than 4.5 yards per carry on the year. Brown came into the game with just one touchdown on the season, but totaled two today. And after failing to surpass 50 rushing yards in any of his first six games, Brown went for 70-plus in his second straight. Joe Flacco has resurrected this entire Bengals offense, and Brown looks like a solid RB2 with a juicy rest of season schedule. I've not been in on him this season, but I think I would actually buy high on the Bengals back. So you're telling me there's a chance? I said last week I was giving up hope, but I hope Travion Henderson can forgive me. He's pulled me right back in. Hendo showed out against one of the best defenses in all of the NFL, averaging 7.5 yards per carry on just 10 touches for a career-best 75 rushing yards. But Mike Vrabel continues to act like an 80s dad who's set in his ways by still feeding Ramondre Stevenson despite Henderson being the better back. Stevenson saw four more carries, but could only muster 34 yards, good for a whopping 2.4 yards per carry. It was the second time this season Henderson saw double-digit touches, so the door is ever so slightly ajar for that second half of the season breakout, but don't go rushing to throw him into your lineups just yet. Another week, another heartbreaking loss for the Giants and Jackson Dart, but this time it was his BFF Cam Scataboo, suffered a gruesome dislocated ankle and is out for the rest of the season. On the minuscule, dimly lit, somewhat of a bright side, Dart rushed for a touchdown in his third straight game and his fourth in his last five. Now, he was able to get a tutty to his buddy before the unfortunate injury, and he still looked good despite playing with dollar store weapons. Dart should maintain his borderline top 12 status thanks to his rushing upside, but that ceiling of his just keeps crumbling with every teammate that goes down. And as for the injuries for Week 8, it was another tough one, especially with Cam Scataboo suffering a gruesome ankle injury with his foot pointing the wrong way. It's out for at least this season, and there's potential to be may not be ready for the start of next season if there's ligament damage. Prayers up for Cam Scataboo. Quinshon Judkins suffered a shoulder injury and was ruled out in a game that was still very much in play. Hopefully the bye is enough for him to heal up, but there's no word on the severity of the injury at the time of recording. Saquon Barkley left the game after the third quarter with a groin injury, but the game was well in hand and it really just sounds like it was precautionary. That being said, keep an eye on the practice reports coming out of the bye. I'm not going to be 100% comfortable until I see him practicing fully. Both Marvin Mims and Luther Burden suffered concussions in their games and did not return. And Rashid Shaheed got banged up at the end of the Saints game, but it didn't look too serious. And that's going to do it for the Week 8 edition of Sunday Best. And once again, thank you for listening. Good luck in all your playoff pushes. I will be back next week for the Week 9 edition. Same bat time, same bat channel. And as always, choose love, not hate.